Welcome to The Inner Circle, the podcast bringing you into honest conversations about climate action. Together, we'll talk to business owners, experts, activists, and others who are working on circular economy initiatives on the ground. We'll uncover what we're doing right, where people are going wrong, and what needs to be done to change the system to value people and the planet. Together, we're making the impossible possible.
Welcome back to The Inner Circle. My name is Erin Andrews. I'm the founder and executive director at Impact Zero, and I'm so happy to have you back with me this week to talk about all things circular economy. So to get started with the updates, so first, some events that are happening that you can join us at. So we have the Circular Business Networking, which is our monthly event that happens on the third Tuesday of every month, and you are welcome to join. You don't need to be living in Canada, you can be from anywhere. The only thing is that obviously you have to either be working in circular economy or be interested in turning your job into a sustainable job or somewhat have some sort of like circular business connection. But if you're interested in joining and meeting other sustainability professionals, you can register for our next event on our LinkedIn page. So we'll put the links to that in the show notes, or you can just literally look up Impact Zero on LinkedIn and you can sign up there and you'll get the notification and the reminder and all of the Zoom links and all the important stuff just through LinkedIn, which is much easier than having to use some other platform. So that's what's happening next. We also, of course, have our monthly Explore series, and all that stuff is posted on there, but Circular Business Networking is the next one that we have coming up. So next, I wanted to kind of share with you just another person on our team, just so we can, you know, give people the recognition that they very much deserve. So the team member I would like to shout out this week is someone who's actually quite critical to the organization. She is our operations director, Emma Murphy. So Emma is basically the person who manages all of the programs that revolve around membership and community engagement. And we have a couple of things that are under wraps at the moment, but we are evolving our network to be a little bit more engaging for those people who are in it. So the idea is that basically we have this community of people who are very interested and educated and knowledgeable about their interests within the circular economy and sustainability world. And so far, Impact Zero has kind of been like, you know, we would post articles for the community to read about, and they're researched and copywritten and everything all professionally. But what we realized was that there's actually a wealth of knowledge within our community that people want to share. And I think people want a platform to share on. So what we're going to do is if you or somebody who has either conducted research or you've been thinking a lot about some things or you have opinions and thoughts and knowledge that you want to share back out to our community, you can basically put together an article or some sort of content in whatever format is best for you, and then we'll post it back out to our community on a monthly publication. So you can kind of think of it as like a magazine or like a monthly digital publication that's created by the community for the community. So that's something that is in the works right now. And that's the type of stuff that Emma focuses on. So super, super cool. And if you want to stay up to date on when that's going to be launched and how you can contribute to it, then you can join our community on our website. We will put the link to the show in the show notes as well. But if you just go on impactzero.ca, then you can click join our community in the main menu and you can, you know, stay up to date with everything that's going on. And then lastly is our fundraising updates. So I want to tell you a little bit about kind of like what we do. So at Impact Zero, our mission is to empower people, like anybody who cares about sustainability and wants to do something. So we empower people to bring circular businesses and community-led solutions to life. So these solutions don't need to be for-profit companies. They can also be, you know, community organizations or like informal initiatives that people just want to take on and they want to just you know, do something that's meaningful that can empower the people around them to take action in sustainability or circular economy ways. So one company that we launched in our Q2 2021 cohort of the accelerator was Case. So you may notice their drop bins in Organic Garage or Fresh City Farms in Toronto. But Catherine joined our accelerator with a business model that was, you know, looking one way, and left the accelerator with a business model that looked completely different. And that business model that she left with is what was really possible, what made it possible for her to scale up her operations to what they are today. So since launching her first pilot with us in May of 2021, Case has diverted now 200,000 black plastic takeout containers from landfill, which is very significant, especially in her first year. This is all net positive impact, right? Because just, you know, collecting one container and recirculating it back to restaurants or recycling it with her, you know, very transparent recycling partners is net positive just from the get-go. So there's no upfront negative impacts similar to other reusable models. So this is like a really innovative one that's proven to work really, really well. And so Case and Catherine at Case is kind of one example of the accelerated projects that we've been able to support. So if you would like to support us in doing that work, it would be really great if you could become a monthly donor to help us to continue to run these programs, because they're completely free. And we actually, at the end of the programs, give them a grant to keep doing the work, which funded Case's first couple drop bins. So if you would like to participate and contribute to these types of solutions, then please use the link in the show notes, or you can just go to impactzero.ca/donate. And by becoming a monthly donor, you'll be funding our program so we can continue to do this work in the future, because it's really important. And there's not anyone else who's doing it to the degree that we are. And so I would really appreciate if you could help us out and contribute to all of that good stuff. So for the episode today, we have a very exciting guest, someone that I've known for quite a while. We have very shared values, and we're actually working together to partner on some programs next year. But if you have not heard of this person, I very much encourage you after this episode to go follow them in all the places. We'll put the links in the show notes as well. But yeah, they're doing really great work. So I'm very excited to introduce Bo Aganiba, who is the Executive Director of Leading Change, where he is responsible for the operations, programs, fundraising, and strategic planning for the organization. His involvement with Leading Change began as the digital network coordinator, where he was responsible for running the Leadership Coffee Chats and Leading Change Hubs, which are two key virtual programs introduced in the light of COVID-19. As a son of Nigerian immigrants and also having lived in multiple countries, Bo is a self-described global citizen. He is passionate about the relationships between urbanism, ecology, social justice, and how we can embrace the natural world within the places that we live. Bo has a degree in biology from Thompson Rivers University, where he was a sustainability ambassador advocating for more sustainable practices and behaviors on campus. He also attended Aalborg University in Denmark, where he studied the Climate Science and Sustainable Cities Master's Program. Through his time at Aalborg University, Bo had the opportunity to engage with local and national stakeholders in various projects and policy proposals, where he learned more about what sustainability looks like on the Danish national stage and within Europe. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation with Bo.
This season of The Inner Circle is sponsored by Reverse Logistics Group, or RLG. Live in 80-plus countries with over 30 years of experience, RLG is a tech-enabled organization that offers tailored recycling and circular economy solutions to meet your needs. RLG puts together convenient solutions that will reduce your environmental impact. RLG gets it. Businesses like yours don't always have the time or the resources to spend thinking about environmental compliance and the health of our planet. RLG is a one-stop solution for compliance, returns, and recycling programs across all Canadian provinces and product categories, including batteries, electronics, and packaging. For example, in Ontario, RLG is collaborating with Circular Materials to help brand owners manage their collection and recycling requirements under the new Blue Box regulation. If you're interested in learning more, contact them at canada@rev-log.com or visit them at www.rev-log.com. That's www.rev-log.com.
Like many, I struggle answering this question, but my name is Bo Ganaba, and currently I'm the Executive Director of Leading Change Canada. In my role, basically, I'm responsible for sort of the high level, as well as a little bit of the nitty-gritty when it comes to making leading change work. And our focus is really on young professionals, young people who are interested in sustainability. Whether it's, through their career aspirations and, making their way through this world as a sustainability professional and regardless of the sector, or maybe it's, more of a personal interest and, you want to learn more about how to make and affect change in your own personal life and in your own community. Our goal is to give you some of those tools that you could use to be more effective, change makers. It's to connect you with other like-minded folks across Canada who are, in similar situations. And it's also to, help you have access to mentorship, and learn from people who've been in the game a little bit longer and are looking for opportunities to give back too. So, we do that through a wide variety of programs, and it's been an absolute pleasure being in this role for the last year and a half or so since I joined.
Clearly, there's a lot of synergies between our work, and we'll get into more about like the leading change stuff, of course. Mm-hmm. But I'm very curious to talk about your transition in the organization, because I know you started off in a different role and you've recently become ED. Yeah. And as a fellow ED, this job is hard. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to hear, what has been your experience in that transition over the last couple of years?
That's another great question. It's been pretty varied. I feel like part of it has been, a little bit of trial by fire, baptism by fire, if you will, where there's some of the aspects of this job, really, there's no way to kind of learn how to do it without just doing it. And so I feel like the first year has really been about learning on the go and finding out where my areas of weakness are, as well as my areas of strength, and being able to have a little bit more clarity in terms of, okay, what do I need to put my energy so that I can be a little bit better at this, and learning, sort of the different areas of development that I think are going to be important for me and important for the organization going forward as well. Trying to put together as well, an idea about where we want to get to in the next few years, as well as, going back and learning what has worked and what hasn't worked so well through the impacts of COVID as well. That's really reinformed, a couple of areas of strategy and growth that we see for our organization going forward. So kind of going through that process as well and marrying, my own personal growth and development with the growth and development of the organization. And it's been fun. It's been challenging. It's been all of the above. But at its heart, it's been really fulfilling. And, I get really inspired by a lot of the people that I get to meet through this role. So I'm thankful for that, because especially in the sustainability space, it can take a toll. It can be difficult work. So, having reminders and inspiration on a regular basis has been probably the best part about this job so far.
Yeah.
the toll it takes to be an ED in any nonprofit is obviously a lot because we're all purpose driven. But I agree when you're talking about climate, and for both of our organizations, we're very focused on like the people and like empowerment and getting people into roles, you know, to be able to like make changes.
Yeah.
So I'm interested, like you mentioned, like setting the goal and the vision and the direction, obviously, of the organization. And like,
yeah,
we're kind of going through that at Impact Zero. We're like, okay, what is the next like 5 years? Like, what's that going to look like? And who sets that? Because obviously as ED, like we're accountable for achieving those visions. But I'm curious, like, since we're so people-centric, have you thought about like how to engage other people's thoughts in that process? Like basically, because we're doing like a consultation, but like, what does that look like for leading change?
Yeah, I don't think there's one right way of doing this. I think it can look like a lot of different things. And oftentimes it's going to be, you know, mostly informed by the network or your audience, the people that you're trying to engage. And I think especially so for leading change, where who we are is really informed by the network, and our programming and things like that are really informed by the network as well. So we do try and request feedback on a regular basis through our touch points, through forum, all of these different kind of opportunities that we have to bring people together. We really want to hear from them what they appreciated and gaps as well, areas that they want to see, you know, us go. So that's been, you know, where I've really learned and leaned on the most. I have a great steering committee as well, which is quite representative of our constituents, the people that we're trying to reach. And so, you know, having them to bounce ideas off of has been really great. It's helped me, you know, test ideas as well. Let's run a program with the steering committee first. How did that feel? Okay, now we can go, you know, outside and give it a try and see if what we thought about it actually tracks, you know, that kind of thing. So that's been sort of the way that we've done it so far. And I mean, it's a work in progress. I think it's has to be that way. It's got to be, you know, for me, one of the things that I've learned over the past 3 years through whether it's coaching or whatever else is, it's really important to make sure that the process is right, and then the goals will kind of fall in line with that. So this is one of those things where it's about trying to figure out the process and make it an iterative thing that, you know, we just keep refining as we grow and as our network grows and all of those kind of things. So, yeah, I don't all that to say there's not one right way, at least that I've found. So we just try different things and keep making adjustments as we see them.
Because we're doing this like consultation process, which like we've done before. We're even asking ourselves like, okay, at what point do we like publish these policies, or like at what point are they like good enough? It's just there's so many evolutions in everywhere that you can just always find imperfections, is what I'm saying. But yeah, you mentioned you have coaches. So like, do you work with coaches a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot, but I have in the past, and I do have, as part of a group of organizations, I have access to mentors that way too. So so that's been something that I've really appreciated. I have once a week sort of mentorship meetings where I get to kind of talk through, you know, things that I'm working on a regular basis and get some feedback. And that's been a huge benefit, especially through, you know, my first year when I was still getting used to the role and transitioning into having different kinds of responsibilities. So, you know, just somebody to kind of test different ideas with and to make sure that I'm thinking or on the right track, that's been really helpful. And I think for a lot of people, especially in a role like this, where you've got responsibility and people that, you know, are relying on you, it can feel overwhelming at times. So to have somebody that you can go to with some of these pieces, it doesn't have to be a specific coach. I mean, sometimes it might be one of your board members, if you have a good relationship with your chair or something like that, like I do, that can be an avenue as well. But regardless, I think having somebody external who's maybe not so involved, and can have that little bit of separation between the work that you're doing. They can give you some objective advice and feedback and things like that. So yeah, it's been really good for me and something that I recommend for everybody.
Yeah. I've always had like my go-to person for like the last probably like 3, maybe 4 years. Like there's always someone that I can like call. And I agree. Like that's like a huge contributor to like a lot of the evolutions that Impact Zero has gone through. Cause it's just, yeah, that like neutral third party that's like, okay, like this makes no sense, Erin. Like what is happening? You know? Also, can we talk about your music? Is that something you're open to talking about?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, cool. Because I listened to some stuff that you have, because you have a whole ass Spotify page, which is so fun. So like, how does that, like, how long have you been doing music for? Has this been like a long time?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've been playing at least in some form, some capacity, basically my whole life. I started, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6, in classical piano, and so that was really like the beginning of my musical education, as well as having a lot of music in the house. My parents are big fans of a lot of different kinds of music, and so we're always like, a lot of my earliest musical memories are road trips and my dad like singing along to like Diana Ross and stuff. Oh like God. That so yeah, that's kind of my musical background. And then I had my my typical, well, I don't know if it's typical, but I had like a teenage angsty phase where I got really into kind of scene and emo and punk and all of that kind of stuff. And my buddies and I, you know, started a new garage band basically every month.
Nice.
And so that's kind of how I started picking up other instruments. I started playing drums and bass and guitar, and I just loved all of it. Like, just give me an instrument and I'll kind of try and figure it out and find a way to express myself. And and then after sort of high school, leaving and going to university at first, I started getting into like the coffee music or the coffee shop music scene and playing open mics and things like that. And so I took a hard left turn and went into folk. And anyway, it's been a little bit of an interesting journey, but I've always played, and now my heart is really I saw some live jazz. And I came back full circle because I used to listen to jazz at home with my parents when I was growing up. But seeing it live, I think, and how that the spirit of improvisation and being able to just compose on the fly, be in the moment, it really inspired me and I became obsessed. So ever since then, I've basically lived in that world, and the music I make now is sort of a blend of jazz and blues and R&B and all that kind of good stuff. And a lot of the lessons I sort of learned from that process of learning how to express myself and improvise, it's like a grounding world philosophy for me now, almost. I always find parallels in other areas to music and to my experience making music and trying my best to live in the moment and be present, because I find that that's where your most creative self comes from. So yeah, it's one of those things that brings me joy and keeps me grounded. And whenever I'm stressed, I know I can just like pick up my guitar and play through my feelings. So yeah, love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I was listening to Clockwork, I think it's called. And like, it's such a vibe. I was like, oh shit, this is like, it's so good. We'll link it in the show notes.
Thank you.
In case people want to listen. But yeah, I'm curious even, because like the arts and any movement are so connected. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, if you just have thoughts generally about like the impact music can have on this, or that it has had, or if that has had any more like connections for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the biggest thing that I'll say about art in general is it's really what I mentioned, right? It has the ability to pull you into the present moment, which I think, you know, is so fundamental to feeling your humanity, right? And when it comes to sort of a holistic vision of the world, which I think is what the power of sustainability can do or help you see, you know, being able to feel that through your experience as a human person right here and now in the present moment, that's where my grounding at least comes from. And it helps me just bring everything together and give me a reason for why I'm doing things. So for artists, I mean, I think, you know, being able to find inspiration through your experiences and reflect that in the art that you make is what makes the most powerful art. And that's I think the biggest contribution that art can really give, reminding people of the human experience and what that feels like. And get us out of our sort of conceptual models, which most of us walk through the world, you know, kind of living through concepts. And it's powerful, and it helps us create and do amazing things because of the nature of like abstract thought or whatever. But when it comes to how do we actually connect with each other, with this planet, with life, with nature, that connection to the present moment is so key, and you can't really do that through abstract thinking. So that's where I see the role of art. I also see, the last thing I'll mention on this is, art has the ability to engage our imagination. And I think a lot of our problems are also related to a lack of imagination and a lack of being able to reimagine the way current ways of doing things. So if we can be inspired by, you know, an artistic vision, then, you know, that's only gonna do well for us. So
it's funny because I'm like not really like a musical. I don't consider myself to be very artistic. I was when I was younger. I've probably like just disconnected from it, honestly. But I think in my like other ways, because I use like meditation, like mindfulness, to like stay present in the moment. And I think it really has impacted a lot of like how I, you know, like see things or like approach things, because it kind of makes me think of like all these like high level forums and like all of these like fancy, you know, sustainability, like new age sustainability, like net zero concepts, which obviously there's a place for all of that stuff. But like in reality, it's like, how are you impacting your neighbor, or like how are you impacting the people you cross on the street every day? And I think people like discount the power of that, right? Like, it's a people problem. Like, as much as people think it's like a GHG, like emissions problem, which like it is scientifically, but like it's if we lose the humanity in it, then like, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. That's the question. What are we doing, right? Sometimes it's really simple. And through our efforts to find some catch-all solution, like we just completely overcomplicate the approach, right? Like, sometimes you just need to kind of take a step back. And I like what you said about meditation, and it's a practice that I do as well, because you get a little bit of space when you have that regular contemplative practice in your life, right? So that you can make a distinction between the abstract concept and reality. And that kind of can just help you penetrate some of the obfuscation that happens when you're neck deep in the weeds all the time, you know, reading about all of this different language that we have to, the jargon that we have to use to be able to communicate in these circles. And I think it can kind of get us feeling a little bit removed from the situation as it is, and seeing things a bit more clearly. So yeah, what are you doing for your neighbor? I like that.
Yeah, right. And I think, like, I don't know if you experience this as well, but I almost feel that like people discount the power of like a small community-led initiative around sustainability, right? Everyone thinks that we need to like find like the next big scalable carbon removal technology that's like multiple of millions of dollars like sunk into R&D. But like, if you tell your neighbors, you can like repair things for them, or like, you know, like these small things, I think, are like honestly more impactful, which is why we've kind of focused in that area. But like, have you felt that as well? Like, do people ever like look down on like those smaller type things?
It's honestly, it's quite reminiscent to me of the same sort of conversation that's happening in healthcare, where, you know, there's been traditionally or historically, at least in the West, an approach about addressing symptoms, you know, rather than causes. And that's all well and good in terms of alleviating, you know, difficulty, but the problem is that you're never addressing any of the root causes. And so they just go on and on until eventually they have to be addressed, right? But if you can identify the problem and address that, then you don't have to be worrying about the symptoms. And in sustainability, that's where I feel like some of these things are distracting us, because we're so focused on treating some of these symptoms that we're not addressing the root causes, which is, how does our community engage each other? How do we feed ourselves? Like, you know, these really core sort of simple things that we need to get right at that small scale, then they're not going to be creating those same issues that we're now trying to fight downstream. So 100%, I've seen it. And I think the issue is, how do we communicate to people that these things are important, that their communities are important? And how do we give them a sense of ownership and belonging? You know, if we can get those things right, then I think we can, you know, go a long way to addressing some of these problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And like, what even is the solution? Because it's so, I mean, obviously it's so complex. There's not one thing. Mm. That's what we're all getting caught up in. But yeah. Like, if you had like one wish for like society, what would you wish?
Let me see what comes to me. If I had one wish, I'll just build on sort of the last thing that I was talking about, right? Which is those two things, that kind of sense of ownership and that sense of belonging. Those two things, those gaps that exist between those things, I think is also reflected in the political discourse that we see, right? Because we don't have a sense of that community, there's that sense of separation, which I think is part of the human condition, right? Individuals, we feel like we're these separate entities. So I think that's where a lot of the gaps come, and a lot of the pathologies that we see in society are created from that, is from people looking for opportunities to find a sense of belonging and connection, but unfortunately, because they don't have a healthy community to find that in, they find it in destructive ways. So I think that's, for me, what I would wish is how do we help communities develop a healthy collective sense of belonging and ownership? And the ownership part of it is really important too, so that we can be accountable to each other, and make sure that we're all kind of rowing in the same direction. The solution side of it, that's the $100 question, right? Like, I have absolutely no idea what that looks like. I think it doesn't have one form, like you mentioned. It's going to look different depending on the community, depending on the culture, all of these different kind of things, right? But I think for most of us, it just starts with finding an opportunity to get involved in your own sphere of influence and with the people that you interact with on a regular basis. And that's it. That's all I would say for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an impossible question, right? I think the belonging thing is something that people probably don't think of the community side of sustainability. Because I think, like, especially in, like, the mainstream conversations, it's like hardcore, like, what's your carbon reduction, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's hard sometimes to articulate like the importance of that, at least for myself, because I guess I'm just like not great at explaining it. But because for Impact Zero, like, we have the community stuff, like, part of it is that, right? Like, just find your community and like we will help each other do our things. And like we're like starting this publication where we like crowdsource knowledge from the community and publish it back out to the community, and like, you know, it's like for us, by us kind of thing. But even then, I find it's kind of hard to like curate a specific enough community that people will feel that deep connection and ownership over it, right? Yeah. I don't know if you've had that experience as well, but it's like, how do you like, you know, position it enough that it's like impactful, but still accessible and like not exclusionary, you know? Like, it's a hard balance, I think.
It's a really hard balance, definitely. And I think this is why this is one of those things that has to be iterative and dynamic and fluid. It's going to change as people change, as you scale. It might grow and dip and grow and dip, all of those different kind of things, right? Because our society is dynamic and so are we as individuals. So I think, our systems and our communities have to reflect that, that dynamism in order to really serve us. And so all that to say, I think you have to be comfortable trying different things and learning from your past iterations of how you do things, and be comfortable accepting that there's not going to be one way and it's going to be dynamic. I think a lot of our discomfort comes from that inability, right, to accept that things change, that everything changes. I'm sure if my sister hears this, she'll roll her eyes, because I always say everything changes. That's one of my mantras.
Yeah. The only certainty is uncertainty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's going to be reflected in our communities as well, as you know, you're at one place in your life, and this is something that you need from a community. And then as you change, what you need from that community is going to change. And so maybe you're going to find your way out and into a new one. So that's okay. I think that's important, and we need to encourage people being okay with that. Mm-hmm. Just being a welcoming space, and try to curate that sense of openness and authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I think the rest should take care of itself.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm so excited for us to do because we're still working on that downtown innovation center. And like, I want it to be that physical, like,
yeah,
you know, like a place where people can actually physically go. Because especially during COVID, obviously it's helped us navigate that uncertainty, I think, a little bit better. But there are so many, obviously, a laundry list of negative side impacts as well, that it's like we need to like find ourselves again in this place.
Yeah, I mean, we were fortunate to have Forum in person this year at the end of March. And mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I got that from so many different people who attended, like being able to be in a room and feel that, it's a physical feeling, that energy that exists when you're in a room full of people and you're, you know, talking about the issues that you care about. And I'm 100% super grateful and thankful for the opportunity to be able to connect virtually. And it's definitely something that we want to get better at doing, mm-hmm. and using more, because the accessibility, you know, barriers that you can lower by having a virtual space is huge and amazing. But it also has, like you mentioned, revealed some of those shortcomings that it has. And so you can use the two to complement each other. And that's what we really want to do going forward, is get better at curating both of these spaces, mm-hmm. and making sure that, you know, when we do come together in person, yeah, that it can be a safe space, that we can share that energy and leave feeling inspired. Because I did. I was on a huge high after Forum this past year, and it's carried me through some of the lulls of our programming and things like that since then. So, 100%. Yeah.
So like on that note, like what's like the next plan for you guys? Like what's like the next 5 year? I know we can't ever predict 5 years, but like what's your North Star?
Yeah, the North Star for us is, well, we were first incorporated in 2019, after, you know, a number of years of just being this annual convener, and COVID really, you know, gave us the impetus to kind of look at the business model. And we thought, okay, we want to be more than just, I say we as if I was there. This is before I joined. But the beginning of COVID, it was, okay, we want to be more than just an annual convener. We would like to be a full year-round organization, consistently offering programming and things like that. So our goal, my goal for our organization is to really solidify and get to a place where we're self-sustaining, mm-hmm. A self-sustaining year-round organization, because currently, you know, we still rely on, you know, wage subsidy programs and things like that, you know, to make sure that we have enough staff to run our programming. And so I'd like us to be self-sustaining and have enough financial stability that where we can kind of look at, okay, we're doing this really well. What can we do more of now that we've got enough resourcing that we can justify the effort that it would take to make that happen? So that's kind of my goal, you know, is to get us to that next step of stability over the next few years, and develop more of our sort of client side work that we're still kind of trying to flesh out. We see a huge gap in terms of, obviously, a lot of organizations are having issues with talent retention and recruitment. And they want to learn from young people, you know, what are they looking for? from employers? What are they looking for in terms of fulfilling careers and job pathways, things like that? So we want to connect those two audiences, right? We've got this amazing network full of passionate young people who want to do work, that is meaningful and impactful. And through some of our connections, through some of our networks and our associations, we've got, a huge roster of organizations who want to make an impact in Canada and around the world as well through their services, through their sector. Let's have a conversation. Let's get these two groups together and inform what the nature of work is going to look like going forward, right? Like, that's, I think we're at a critical sort of inflection point, especially over the next 10 years. And we want everyone to feel like every job is a green job. So how do we make that a reality?
I mean, if people I saw this article on LinkedIn the other day, and it was like, what was it saying? Something along the lines of like the best climate action a company could take is to engage the HR teams, because then you can like infiltrate, sustainability, all these types of values in everybody, and then they can find where sustainability actually like manifests in their position. So I think that's really exciting, because I believe that like for ever since I was in like corporate, I was like, I feel like everybody, I was in the ESG team, but I was like, there's so much like opportunity if people just like put a sustainability, even like social lens on what they're doing, that they would open up so much opportunity, beyond, don't use disposable cups in the coffee room or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think being able to have that storytelling aspect of what you're doing and how it fits into this broader picture is so critical, right? Like, everybody talks about purpose and all of these sort of different words that we want to feel comes through in the work that we're doing. But if we don't have that narrative that can go along with it, it's easy to feel disconnected. And so I think that's something that we really want to engage employers with is how are you telling your story and how is your story reflected in the work that you're doing and how does that fit in with the broader picture about what we want to accomplish as a society and our society's values and all of these things, right, that we want to see reflected. And for the young people who are working at those organizations, like, how do you feel like your own personal values can be represented through the work that you're doing? And how are you telling that story? And how are you connecting it to that bigger picture? So, yeah, I mean, I think it's starting to happen, certainly, which is really exciting. But I think we need a lot more of us thinking about this and thinking about how to make it a reality, how to make it the norm, I should say.
Like not the outlier, 100%. And like on that note, I think another side of it too is like once we have the people, in those positions seeing things this way, I think another challenge is going to be, okay, how are they then able to act on those gaps that they're seeing, right? And like the leadership buy-in and like having like the systems internally to like collect those ideas and like have support and budget to actually change it, because corporations are like a whole thing.
Yeah, the buy-in is really important, right? Like, we do need to be having frank conversations with those who are pulling the levers, so that they can understand how this story fits as well, right? And see how or the reasons why it's important to have empowerment at those lower levels of your organization, because a lot of change that is really going to be paradigm shifting is going to come from the bottom up. Because you need that buy-in from all of the people who are doing the day-to-day things that are making your organization work. So for sure, that's a huge part of it. And I can only hope that as the implications of climate become more stark and more obvious, that it becomes less of a challenge to get that buy-in. I hear from conversations that that's starting to happen. I don't know if that's true or not. I hope so, but
I feel like there are like mixed reviews. Sometimes on some days I'm like, oh, absolutely, we are on track. And then days like this happen. I mean, I'm timestamping this recording now, but the Roe versus Wade decision, I'm just like, nothing matters. Like literally we are going backwards in all areas. And it's hard to stay optimistic, I think, sometimes, but I think that's where community can come in, right? Because then like we can have this conversation and it's like, yes, like there are people, a lot of good people who are working on a lot of important things, and that's gotta mean something, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So like if there are people, whether they're people who work in corporations or they're youth who want to engage with leading change, like what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so I would say the best way is to sign up for our mailing list, which you can do at our website, which is www.leadingchangecanada.com. You can follow us on social media. We're on all the major platforms except TikTok for now. We'll see if that changes. So yeah, that would be the best way to stay up to breast. What's the word? Upkeep? I can't even remember how to say that. To stay up to date on, keep abreast, that's what I'm trying
there
to say,
you go.
of all the things that we're doing. So yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, etc., and the mailing list for sure. And yeah, and we try and stay in communication with our audience on a fairly regular basis. We've always got stuff going on, whether it's coffee chats or the podcast or the Leading Change Hubs, things like that. And we welcome feedback too. If there's something that you want to see from us, something that you want to see from a community of sustainability minded young folks, let us know, and we can try and make it happen.
Yay. I love it. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's good. We're taking a lot of the summer to do some strategic work, so we don't have as much kind of going on right now. Okay. So I don't have anything in particular that I want to sort of promote, but I think that's good.
Sweet, sweet.
Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of The Inner Circle. If you'd like to learn more about the foundation, you can visit our website at impactzero.ca. You can also find us on Instagram at impactzero.ca and as well on LinkedIn, Impact Zero Foundation. Thanks again for hanging out with us today, and we'll see you next week.